So we're trying to take a step back and look through, like, one of the major players in creating that movement was Paul. And so we took a step back and we're looking at, you know, like, these things that Paul in his journey learned that we can learn from. Because if we look around, a lot of Christianity in North America doesn't look all that movemental. And we'll get at what the difference is, and, you know, like, by the end of this thing, we're going to spend a Sunday on movement, and Chris will be leading us through, like, how do we actually participate that in, you know, like, mostly, like, how individually do we become part of the movement? But little by little, we're kind of exploring what movement looks like, because it's the equation, kind of like basic algebra. If you want to know the parts, you know, of the equation, and you don't know them all yet, you better know, like, what the result is. I think. I'm not terribly good at the maths, but it makes sense to me, this graphic. So Chris talked about, you know, mission in the first week and how Paul started out with the wrong mission, you know, but through some brute force and a lot of trials and tribulation, ended up with the right one, which is good. You know, that may happen to us. Hopefully we don't go through as much as Paul did. And then we talked last week about Paul's first missionary journey as they started to leave Jerusalem, Judea, Samaria, to the ends of the earth, right? As Paul started to take the message finally, the vision that was inside him for the mission to the Gentiles was finally coming true. He had to figure out how to take the message that was a particularly Jewish story and make it, you know, make sense wherever he took it. Which was different all the time. And we looked at that through the lens of what he did in Athens, right? With the, he said, he found that crack, that gap in the culture, the idol to the unknown God. That for Paul, that was it. He's like, this is the crack where I can stick this story and it'll make sense to them. If I contextualize it that way. So that was last week. This week, we're going to talk about, you know, Paul on his second missionary journey. He discovers some things that make it easier for Christianity to start to explode. He discovers a method of how to actually do these things instead of just traveling all over the known world and, like, sprinkling the message all over the place. He develops a method and he learns it, you know, quite early on. So we're gonna kind of march through that story. But in the end, what we're trying to solve for, what we're trying to get, is movement. And you know, I covered it a little bit last week, but it's helpful to kind of step back and say, what's the difference? Like, what, if not movement, what else are we pursuing, right? You know, if we want movement and we maybe have some or not all or whatever, like, what's versus what? You know, and so it's easy. This was an illustration that I heard recently, fairly recently, and it was really, really helpful for me to understand the difference between movement and not movement. All right, and I think you'll get there as we go on. So let's start out with a picture of what we don't want, but we often have. All right? And this is, we're going to use two different kinds of trees to kind of explore the different ideas and what we're trying to get at. And the first tree is a banyan tree. Has anyone ever seen or heard of a banyan tree? Yeah? Yeah, that's one tree, by the way. It looks like a forest. All right, it covers 4 acres in India. It's like the largest known banyan tree. It's one tree. And the way that it accomplishes that is that as the branches grow out and would normally, like, snap off, it just sends down prop roots. All right? And the branches keep going, sends more prop roots, prop roots, prop roots. All right? So that's all one tree, everything you see there. And as it grows old, you can't distinguish between the main trunk, really, and all the new trunks that form from these prop roots. And the thing is that they're very impressive. 4 acres. That's all one tree. It's very impressive, right? But a couple of things are true of a banyan tree. Nothing grows under a banyan tree. As you can see, flat, you know, like, no vegetation underneath, just dead leaves. Just dead leaves. And the thing is, like, as banyan trees grow old, especially this one's, you know, over 100 years old, old trees tend to stop bearing much fruit. It's interesting to know how a banyan tree gets started. It's It's a type of fig, really, and it usually most banyan trees start by using a host tree and growing up a host tree, which eventually dies, and as it spreads out and crowds it out and squeezes it and strangles it. But as trees get older, you know, we know this about old apple trees, cherry trees, like they stop, unless you're pruning and getting new growth and all kinds of stuff, you know, like fruit slows down. But it's very impressive. It's very impressive. So, a lot of times, we build very impressive organizations in North America to surround, you know, this initial seed of Christianity, of following Christ, of being the church. We surround it and build very complex, very impressive structures, organizations. It can get very, very big, right? But there is a limit to how big a banyan tree can get. There's a limit. Now, the other option, the option of movement, is really, really sort of typified, I think, very, very well by banana trees. All eating bananas, you know, banana trees. You may not know that a typical banana tree grows up, bears fruit, and dies in about 9 to 10 months. But before it dies, it bears fruit, and before it dies, there's actually no seeds. You know, bananas don't, I don't know if you never thought about that, or there's no seeds in the fruit of the banana. It's not genetically engineered to be that way. They just, no seeds in the fruit of the banana tree. The way the banana trees reproduce is that at the base of the banana tree, it sends out these, you know, couple, two, three, sometimes as many as like 6 to 8 new banana trees. And the mother, the mother dies, falls down, making room for the new banana trees to grow up. And the fascinating thing is that you can just take a sharp shovel, dig, you know, one of those suckers they called, you know, dig them right out and take it anywhere you want. Go plant it, start a whole new plantation of banana trees. In fact, you could even take the root of that mother, the initial banana tree, you could dig it out of the ground, chop it up into pieces. We could all put them in our pocket, take them all, you know, like to the ends of the earth, and plant new banana trees. Now, banana trees are smart. They don't like the cold, so it doesn't work so well around here. We'd have to go south, and that would be maybe, you know. But that is the case with banana trees, all right? So that there's just no limit to how big a group or a plantation or a forest, if you will, of banana trees can grow. So they're constantly, you know, dying and reproducing that next generation, making room for it to grow up. Now, what does this all have to do with movement of Christianity? See, I think initially, Paul, on his first missionary journey, as he's going, he's working really, really hard. All right, he goes to a place, he preaches the gospel, and amazing things happen. And everywhere he goes, he leaves a church behind. He goes, he preaches the gospel, the good news, people come to faith in Jesus Christ, the church, he leaves a church behind. And more and more and more. He finally orbits back, you know, to Antioch in Jerusalem and things like that, and he starts, you know, to get word, get letters and things like that. And that's where most of our letters come from, is Paul, like, writing to the churches he starts that can't really make it without him. He's, like, writing instructions furiously. We don't even have anything we have. I mean, so there's evidence that, you know, there's a lot of other letters. He references letters to certain churches that we don't have. You know, so, like, he's always right, constantly, like, he is, you know, propping up these other churches that he planted. And I think, you know, I think at that point, we don't really know, Paul didn't really tell us exactly, but it's clear that something changes in the way he goes about things, his method, if you will, when he goes out on his second missionary journey. All right? To the point where, instead of Paul needing, you know, the influence of Paul going out and being with letters, Paul starts to write and says, I'm sending you Timothy. I'm sending you, you know, this dear child of mine in the faith. I trust I trust them to take care of you, to make more, something changes in the way Paul does it. All right? To the point where when he finally, he gets to Ephesus, he settles down for quite a while. And I would He stops going. He stops going and being the guy who is preaching the good news to the Gentiles, who is starting all these new churches. And if you ask me, there's a death that happens there for Paul. I mean, how exciting. If you were here in the first week, Chris mentioned like the struggle that Paul went through to finally be given the opportunity to fulfill this vision that he had, that Jesus had given him to be the apostle to the Gentiles. After a decade of struggle and failure, probably, he finally is going, right? And eventually comes to the point where he's staying and sending. And to me, that indicates a death. There's a death to self that Paul has. So how did he get there? Let's back up just a little bit and read what Paul witnessed. If you remember last week, I mentioned that Paul, when he first was on his own, that the first recorded time that we really have of him preaching preaching a sermon, it was in a synagogue, just after Barnabas and Paul were in Cyprus. And I mentioned that it was astoundingly similar to the one that Stephen preached, where we know that then his name was Saul, and he was holding the coats for the people that happened to throw rocks at Stephen. It's pretty clear that things were registering, even if he was having the wrong mission at the time. Now, it's interesting to then look back. We're going to go all the way back to Acts chapter 2, where Saul at the time, is first given the mission of destroying the church, right? What did it look like? What did the church look like at that point in time in Jerusalem? Just so happens we have a pretty good description in Acts chapter 2, verse 42. It said, so all the believers at this point in time are still huddled in Jerusalem. There's quite a bit more than 120 still, but they're huddled in Jerusalem. It says, the believers devoted themselves to the apostles' teaching, to fellowship, to sharing in meals, including the Lord's Supper, and to prayer. A deep sense of awe came over them all, and the apostles performed many miraculous signs and wonders. Now here's the part I want you to pay attention to. All the believers met together in one place. Big group. They met together in one place and shared everything they had. They sold their property and possessions and shared the money with those in need. They worshiped together in the temple each day, where they could all be together. But then they met in homes for the Lord's Supper and shared their meals with great joy and generosity, all the while praising God and enjoying the goodwill of all the people. And each day, the Lord added to their fellowship those who were being saved. Now, this is where the church is when Paul enters the scene. Because just a little bit later, time-wise, Stephen is standing before the religious leaders and ticks them off a lot, enough for them to want to throw rocks at him and kill him. And Saul is there holding their coats. And that's when everything falls, at this moment in time, it's kind of like, hey, we get to meet in the temple, we get to meet in the home, so they're gathered together in the temple each day, listening to the apostles, and they have to kind of scatter, I know for a fact, households were different sizes then, and people, remember the day of Pentecost, people were in from out of town, so these households that they gather in were probably quite large, 50 plus, I'm sure. Don't confuse house meeting together in their homes with the way that we normally think of, what fits in a house. So they lived on this continuum of between gathering together in the temple, scattering it in their homes. All right, and they enjoyed the goodwill of all the people. And then Stephen, stoned, everything just starts to fall apart. The leaders of the Jewish people start to come down hard on this new followers of the way, to the point where the apostles say, we'll stay here and kind of hold down the fort, but the rest of you should get out of town. And it's kind of inconceivable that they would all just, as nuclear, like two, like husband, wife, and a couple kids would just go all their separate ways. They would go together in the households that make life work. Right? The oikos is the Greek word for household, which includes servants and people who work for you and happen to, you know, live, you know, in the room around back that you just cobble together. The extended family, the brother, like they would go in those households that made life work. And Paul, who was called Saul at the time, was given the task of going house to house to try to round up and get rid of these people. But the thing is, wherever those households went, first to Judea, first then to Samaria, and to, you know, like the Antioch, like wherever they went, more households popped up. They took the good news with them, and like it's like, you know, a part of that banana tree root was taken with them, and they, you know, wherever they ended up, they planted it, and more banana trees would grow. This was what Saul was up against, witnessing as he was trying to, as he had the wrong mission of trying to get rid of the church, right? And he gets the right mission, and being a typical human being, thinking they can solve all the world's problems by themselves, he goes out first kind of with Barnabas, but then they have a little like falling out. He says, fine, I'll go by myself, Barnabas. And he starts to go. And he's everywhere he brings the message, there's like, people come to faith. The good news is successful. The problem is what's starting to be formed looks a lot like a banyan tree, where all these new churches that kind of pop up are sort of dependent on Paul initially. So I think something happens after that first missionary journey where Paul starts to realize just how hard it is, just how precarious it is that all these new, you know, like these roots that he put down are all dependent back on him. He starts to change his strategy. He starts to pour himself. And it's not like, you know, what we see in Jerusalem is a mistake. It's exactly what Jesus planned for. Right? Jesus Christ spent not a lot of time making a huge fancy organization, not a lot of time, you know, like making sure the crowds got bigger and bigger and bigger. I mean, they came. I mean, people responded, right? But so it's not that bigness is the problem, but the majority of his time he spent pouring into that next generation. These people that follow along with him, just like the little, you know, suckers on a banana tree. And what happened? The main tree had to die. Be removed. And the apostles, we see in the book, in those early chapters of the book of Acts, if you were to take your thumb and put your thumb blocking out their names, right? If you didn't, if you like the things that it says Peter does or Paul does you would think you were reading the Gospels again, that these are the things Jesus does, right? But his apostles are the ones doing them now. And as the apostles are pouring themselves into and the people are devoting themselves to the teaching and the everything that kind of happens in there, we see Stephen, we see Paul, we see Barnabas, we see more banana trees grown and scattered throughout planting communities. Now, the thing is, so as Paul, you know, witnessed that, it's clear that he changed his strategy and started pouring his life into a few others that he then sent to do the same. By the time he gets to Ephesus, he decides to stay, to plant roots, to teach, to pour himself out even more into the next generations and send them out. And it says in just a few years, all of Asia heard the good news. Not because Paul went there and preached it to every single town or whatever, but because the people that Paul poured his life into went and did it. Now, a couple other things I think it's important to know about banana trees that applies to this whole situation. You can take a little chunk of the root or one little sucker, you know, from a banana tree and go and plant it by itself. It needs very rich soil, needs plenty of water. It doesn't like cold temperature. Like there's good, you know, like environmental things that you can do to help that banana tree grow, and it'll grow. problem is, one banana tree by itself doesn't work very well. Banana trees have these gigantic leaves, all right, that evaporate lots and lots of moisture. You put a bunch of banana trees together, and they create a little microclimate where they can hold their own humidity on a dry day, where they can moderate high temperatures. They're kind of picky. They don't like super hot temperatures. They don't like cold. So together, they sort of create that microclimate where they can thrive. Alone, a single banana tree doesn't do very well. You can work, try to get it in the right temperature, in the right soil, give it the right amount of water. It'll grow. But it won't bear good fruit like a bunch of banana trees together. And I think we see this playing out. This idea, if you can like kind of go with me in the metaphor, we see this playing out as well. Where it was whole households that went. Paul, and you know, it goes all the way back to Jesus, right? There's no one-man job for Jesus, right? He sends two people to get the stupid donkey. There's no one-man job with Jesus. He knows that discipleship happens in a group amongst a family. He creates this family that travels with him, that he gives freedom to try things and fail and experiment. And, you know, he steps out of the way so that they can grow. And the same thing is happening with Paul. The gospel moves from household to household. When he first steps into Europe and meets Lydia, you know, it's a single, you know, it's a woman, but it's the people who are with Paul, they go back to Lydia's house and her whole household comes to faith. And then they make a ruckus and they get put in jail. God has favor on them even there. Earthquake, miraculous. And the whole jailer's household comes to faith. In discipleship, we see happens best in these households, in these families. To the point where the most powerful movement gets going, where the flywheel really gets going, is when he stays, when he plants roots in a place, where he makes these predictable patterns in the book of Ephesus, right? Where he's like during the siesta time, whenever he rents out this lecture hall, and he just like every day he's lecturing, he's teaching. And then so he's giving them information, but he's still there and they could do life with him and they're eating together and it's the same balance, right? Between temple and home. It's not either or. Now, I don't want to stand up here and say that, you know, accuse us all of trying to be the giant banyan tree. Because I don't see that really at all. At times in our history at the branch, it turns out that banyan trees are also one of the best trees for bonsais. And they're very cute, very manageable. Not going to block anything out. They're not going to... At times, I think, in our history, the branch has been like a bonsai banyan tree. It's been very carefully tended. There's advantages to being small. It's accessible. It's not clouding out all the light around us or anything like that. But it's also not reproducing either. I think that's where we were, you know, like 4 or 5 years ago. We told this story many times and where we kind of woke up. And we didn't have the picture for it at the time, but I think that's a pretty good picture of where we were at the time. It was good. It was fun to be a part of. There was something very beautiful, carefully tended about the branch. But we weren't disciples who were creating disciples who were creating disciples. There wasn't much of that going on. So the question became, how do we change that? How do we get the movement? And I've seen some really, really good examples. You know, it's not been perfect over the last few years, but we've been trying our feet at how do we take on this method. And just one quick, you know, like story of that. We celebrated just a couple, how long? Like 3 weeks ago, 4 weeks ago, Jonathan and Jennifer Annable, most of you guys know them. We celebrated them, sending them off. And I tell you what, the fact that that God was able to give Jonathan and Jennifer a mission, a vision for mission that didn't begin and end here at the branch, that was for Detroit, that was for something that the fact that God could give them that vision, and that over the course of, like, they've had that vision for 3 years. You may not have known it. They kept it a little bit tight because they didn't want to upset anyone that they were eventually leaving. But they've had that for a few years. The fact that, like, over those course of time, they could stay here at the branch and grow, become strong, start to reach out to people in Detroit so that when they go there, they're not by themselves. They're not that lone banana tree. You know, and I see, and I look around, and I see a lot of you played a hand in their growth and cultivation, creating good soil, you know, like being the other banana trees around them so that that it was a good place for them to grow and thrive. And I think we're starting to get it. Because if we were the banyan tree, nothing grows under a banyan tree. And I watch that. And they're not the only ones. It's just one example. But I look at that and I was like, let's have more of that. Let's have more of that. Let's have more of listening to God for what your mission is. You know, train. Give you the training and whatever it takes so that you can bring the message, the good news, into different contexts, wherever the cracks in the culture are that God is putting you in that mission. And let's be okay with, as long as all these missions that we have, these visions for mission align in a movemental sort of way, we're all moving in the same direction of the kingdom, then let's have room for all those missions. Let's have room for new banana trees to grow up in our midst in this kind of microclimate that is healthy with good soil and so that we have disciples. We make disciples. And whether they are sent to Detroit or a different section of our city or your workplace or whatever it is. We're not limited in the way that a banyan tree is. Because even the great banyan tree that I had a picture of, 100 plus years, I think more than that, maybe a couple hundred years, right? It's managed to take up 4 acres. That's impressive. But you could start with just one corm, just one root of one banana tree. And in just a few years, you could multiply that out to cover dozens and dozens of acres. And then, a few years, you could have, literally, you could have hundreds of acres of banana trees growing in just a few years. That's what I want to be a part of. That's the difference between movemental and not. That's how the gospel goes from 120 people huddled in an upper room, sad about their leader dying and leaving, even if he got raised, gone. Their leader's gone. To fully half of the Roman Empire in just 250 years-ish. That's what I want to be a part of more and more and more. So I think each one of us have to look around. I have to do this almost daily. So what things am I doing that look a lot like a banyan tree? What are we doing together that might look like habits of a banyan tree? And what things are we doing together that look a lot like the reproduction, the health and the growth and the multiplication of banana trees? Choose more of the banana tree, less of the banyan tree over time. You get to be a part of kingdom movement. And that's my prayer for this family. Let's pray. God, at some level, each one of us, in some ways, would choose the impressiveness, the importance of being at the center of a banyan tree. of a place that looked like that. But if we take a hard, honest look at the example of your son Jesus, we would see and know what the real choice is. We would understand, Jesus, when you said that to follow you means to pick up our cross, to lose our life in order to gain everything. All that would start to make sense. So as we move forward, God, we say we want to act more and more like the banana tree, like your son Jesus. Give us the eyes to see the things we need to change and the courage to change them. Give us eyes to see where we are doing well and to celebrate that, to honor it. Get excited about doing more of that. That's our prayer, Jesus. Amen.